Blog Talk Radio. Hello there, hello there, hello there, my darlings. Thank you all for your patience and your kindness. This is another glorious Thursday. It's raining here in Atlanta. In fact, we're up under rain advisories and things of that nature. And welcome to a special edition of Dishing Tea. Of course, today we're supposed to have Mr. James Avery on as our special guest. And once again, I'm having some technical difficulties with getting him on the line. I'm not exactly sure what we are experiencing at this moment. However, I do believe that he could be on set somewhere and is not hearing the phone ring or whatever the case may be. However, we're going to continue on moving forward until I can get him to come on in. So in his absence or while we're waiting, let me go here because I've had this on my mind for a few days now. I was going to wait until Wednesday to possibly present this. However, I need you guys' opinion on something, and please chime in if you want to come on in. The number is 347-205-9183. Once again, 347-205-9183. And my biggest thing right now is on education. And see, this ties right into it because Mr. Avery has this wonderful commercial out where he does this fantabulous monologue about how the system has failed us. And he rants and he raves about how the system itself has not done its job when preparing students and making sure that they're at their best and in their excellence. And along with that, we're hearing the news, the many, 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 many school closings, the many, 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 many dropouts, the many, 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 many problems that our school system is having across the country. I got wind to some things that's going on in Detroit, my hometown, where they are asking, in fact, the Detroit Federation of Teachers have passed this, at a 60 to 40% ratio, that they are asking the teachers to pay into this pot. It's a $10,000 pot each that they're asking the teachers to pay into. It's some kind of loan program. It's called the Termination Incentive Program, TIP. How about that? And they're asking every teacher they voted and agreed that the teachers are going to give them $500 a month for the next 40 pay periods. It's $250 per paycheck. So it's $500 a month until they accrue this $10,000 each into this plan. Now, I don't have all of the specifics, so please, y'all go Google it and find out more about it. However, I am completely livid about that. The teachers don't make any money as it is. You know, that the underpaid, overachieving, as far as overworked, rather, as far as the students, they have, you know, oversized classes. It is absolutely ridiculous. And to have this particular program in place, TIP, the Termination Incentive Program. Can you get that? It just unnerves me to no end. I am absolutely flabbergasted by all of this because I don't know exactly what it is that we ought to do, what we should do, what we can do in order to get our greatest resources, which is our education for our children, back into the forefront again. But the question remains, how do we do that when our schools are fighting against the common law street thug? How do you get education to be an example or to get it to be the commodity that it is when everything about street life indicates that education is for the birds? When the dope dealer on the corner can make more money in a week than you make in a year, okay, quickly and easily, with what seems to be little or no effort. I'm not understanding the nature of this. I'm not understanding how anyone can compete with those particular states. I'm not understanding how our government and how our elected leaders sit up and want to cut educational programs. How do you cut education and take money from the educational system when the students are not even competing or achieving minimum basic skills? And yet we're calling ourselves preparing them for a global economy, preparing them to go out into the real world and to prepare them to compete and to be scholastic scholars or some kind of academic achievers when they can't even do the basic reading, writing, and arithmetic formulas. I'm really at a loss for words on that. We see constantly and hear constantly that the students are not having enough adequate equipment or supplies. Teachers have already gone out of their pockets to go and make sure that they get pens and paper and notebooks for the people for the students rather to be able to function in the classrooms. I'm not understanding how our parents don't take a vested interest in their children's education. I don't understand how we have let an entire generation of kids skate through the cracks. Okay? Anytime the option becomes, because I've worked in an alternative educational facility, anytime the option becomes either you go to school or go to jail as an option, what seems to be the problem here? What are we missing? What are we not connecting here? Something in this equation that's not adding up. And apparently, I guess not, because they're not teaching the reading, writing, and arithmetic, huh? Nobody's getting their geometry lessons to find out and solve for x in this equation. I don't understand it, and it's pissing me off, because when we were a proud people, when you look over your history and understand that mathematics and science were the areas in which our people excelled and overachieved in those particular areas, we're the ones that created the pyramids and things of that nature. We are the people that sit up there and have the brain cells that it takes. We have created and built this damn country on the blood, sweat, and tears of our ancestors set up there. A lot of these inventions that we take credit, that we take advantage of, rather, have been created by our people. The stop signs, for instance, the fire ladders, all the little things that you think were just happened upon us were created by our people because we were doing all the damn work. So when we found easier ways and found a better system to get the work done or whatever, of course we don't get the credit for it now. Well, then, but we're starting to get credit for it now as we research and understand where a lot of this stuff comes from. However, it's our people who have done that, and it seems that it's our people who are taking the hit for it. Blacks are not in school anymore. We have the highest dropout rates in the country. We're not getting that education, and I don't understand it. People, talk to me. What is it? Am I preaching to the choir? Because I think I got folks, who feel my pain, but I need to get at those folks who say something else otherwise. I need to get somebody, talk to me and tell me what the hell is going on, because I don't understand it. Are we too busy putting our kids on medicine and carrying on and not focusing on their educational needs? Are we too quick to say this is a special ed child because the teachers don't want to invest the time that it takes because they may learn a little bit differently than somebody else? What the hell is going on with our educational system, and why are we not as passionate about making sure that these damn kids get educated as we are about a fucking Super Bowl? You can sit up there and argue, bitch, and fuss about a damn Super Bowl all day and find out who's going to win this damn Super Bowl, but none of that same passion is in the educational system and why these damn kids are dumb and stupid and can't compete against anybody else. Everybody want to go over to China and over in all these other different places to get education. And the greatest country in the world is number, we were 23, I think we went up to number 16 or 17 or whatever. The greatest country in the world can't even compete in the educational pool. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of hearing that. I'm sick of it. Okay, I see I got some hands up. Okay, I'm coming here. Let me go here first. 313-371. 313-371. Hey, baby, you're dishing tea with Big Meats. Hello, darling. You're on the air. Hey, Auntie, what's going on, sugar?
For one, I'm feeling your pain, but I'm not feeling your adequate about coming across.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm across better than that. And
yes,
then,
ma'am.
Two, it starts in the home. You saying about our ancestors. Our ancestors made sure we went to school, made sure we got our homework, made sure we did it. They didn't put it up to the teachers to make us mind and learn. They helped us to do it. So now you get in and say, what's wrong with the government? What's wrong with us? It's not what's wrong with the government. And what's wrong with these parents? They need to go back to the old school.
Okay.
And start doing for their kids. They let these kids run wild. Not the teachers, not the government.
The
government is in fault of a lot, but we're in fault of ourselves. We look for someone else to do what we're supposed to be doing for our kids. We look for someone else to train them. We look for someone else to make them mad. These teachers go through hell with these kids.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, okay,
the
yes.
They come in the schools. They don't have no respect. No anything. These teachers needs to be pat on the back.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Right.
And then some of them, they need to be kicked out of the teaching system.
Profession. Okay, right. If you can't cut the mustard, okay, right. Come on now.
Some of them, they went in there because they are lovers of teaching. Some went in there for the money.
Right,
and they
right.
They don't care whether you learn or not learn. So they need to scream the teachers. But we also need to get in these parents' behind.
Yes, ma'am.
These
yes,
young
ma'am.
Ones. And make them put some etiquette and put some respect, give these kids a respect level because they don't have it. Teach them right from wrong. Put some God in them.
All right now.
Because they don't have it. Teach them about the Lord God Almighty, our Creator.
Say it now. Say it.
And start taking them to church and put them in that Bible and show them which way to go.
Okay, show them the way. All right, all
right. Because when I was coming up, the things I see these kids doing, they couldn't do it.
Right. Oh, please.
I seen on the TV, this old man was on there on the thingamajig where they have these people coming on for entertainment shows where you own the next top this or the next whatever. And
they
made this song up, your pants on the ground, your pants on the ground, put your pants on or something. Now he's trying, that's something that everybody need to buy. And make their kids look, these boys, look at it. Wearing their pants below their behind, advertising. To me, I tell them when I see it, you're telling somebody to come and get it.
Okay.
Put your pants up.
Okay. Well, Auntie, on that, let me say thank you for calling in. I see I've got someone who just called in who I need to speak with. And
okay.
His monologue, I'm telling you,
when
I see...
You go ahead on with your program, and you go ahead
yes.
on with what you're doing,
yes.
but you,
thanks, ma'am.
You curve that language.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
You curve that language. You can get your point
yes,
across
ma'am.
Without that language.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, sweetheart.
All right, Auntie.
I love you. Keep
okay.
the good work up. All right.
Thanks, ma'am. Uh-huh.
You're welcome. Be blessed.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Lord, that's my auntie, y'all. Yeah, she going to put me in check. I know I got a potty mouth. But here is the guest of honor coming in. You know him affectionately as he's been deemed the father of this hip-hop generation. The next elevation from Cosby, he's known as affectionately as Uncle Phil, or Alonzo Sparks, you know, for those of y'all who remember Sparks when he was working with Terrence Howard and Miguel Nunez. But most, I was referring to his monologue on this new commercial that he has out about the educational system has failed. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is Mr. James Avery. Mr. Avery, hello there. How are you?
I'm blessed. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I missed you, but, you know, in the morning there's certain things one has to take care of.
Okay.
One can't let me sit by the phone and wait, you know?
Okay. When the queen calleth, honey, she needs her subjects to meet her at the throne.
You know?
I do understand.
Thank you so much. You know,
thank you so
royalty,
much for gracing us.
The royalty still has other things to do.
Okay, right, okay.
Okay.
Now, while we were waiting for you to come on in, I said I was going to start off, I, number one, need a copy of that monologue just simply because it's sickening. But this monologue that you give in this commercial about the system has failed you,
yes.
Mr. Professor.
It was a wonderful commercial, you know.
God, I live for that monologue. I said, I got to find, I'm going to end up recording that just so I could write it down. Because
oh.
I think it needs to be the mantra across the globe as far as the educational system is concerned. I am just living for that monologue.
Oh.
And thank you for that delivery, honey. That, oh, yes.
Well, thank you.
Whew.
Thank you. I didn't write
yes.
it. You don't have
that's
to
all right. Whoever wrote it, we'll give them the
yeah.
credit, you know, once we find out. But
well, you know
your delivery
say,
of
it you know
is just
it's not
stupendous.
On the page, if it's not on the page, it's not on the stage. So.
You know it. Oh, so now let's get into the world of Mr. James Avery.
Oh, I don't know.
Because for years, a lot of us have been watching you for years. If I went over your bio. And as I went down, I was like, oh, my God, I remember that. And oh my God, I forgot he did that. And, wow, that he was in that? And then I had to think back on it, and I'm like, okay. You know, and you have a very impressive monologue.
Oh, well, thank you.
I mean, dossier.
Thank you.
So was this something that you've always wanted to do, was go into the field of acting and entertaining?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. No, I wanted to be a writer. That's what
oh.
I and, my mother raised me. I was raised by a single mother. And my mother never got the memo that a single woman couldn't raise a male child, you know. This is old school.
Okay.
You know, I brought you
okay.
to the I take you out, make another
hey.
Like it, that kind of rearing, you know.
I understand it. I'll come from that same school, so go ahead.
Okay. You can have quiet time after I bust your butt, okay?
Exactly.
And but she didn't have much of an education, but she respected education. So I always had books, and, you know, National Geographics and little golden books, and education was just very important.
Did you say little golden books? Wow, you
I
took
did.
Me back.
Huh?
Okay, go ahead. Wow. Woo!
All
okay.
Books, all those little things. You know, Jack and Jill Club and all that stuff. And
stop!
So
oh my God!
I was into reading, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a football scholarship out of high school to Virginia State College in Petersburg. And I was 17, I think. And never been away from home. Went to a historically black college. Never been surrounded by so many beautiful women in my life. And just that whole social milieu that is a historically black college. I don't know if you haven't gone, they don't know, but I'm sure you're familiar with what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that just took me right out of my little thing, and I lost my scholarship and all that stuff and flunked out of school.
Oh, you did not sit up there and become big baller on campus and lose the damn football scholarship.
Yes, I did. Flunked right out.
Oh, Mr. Man. Okay, tell your story, child.
So I did. Got home, mom was like, well, your big butt ain't going to lay around here for the rest of your life, so you have to do
well, how about it?
So I had to join the Navy. I joined the Navy because it was during Vietnam. They were drafting for the Army Marines, and there was no way in the world I was going to go into the Army. So I joined the Navy. And when I got out of the Navy, I stayed in California, and I started going to San Diego City College. And while I was there, one of my instructors asked me to audition for a play, and I did. And I liked it. Well, this was during the 70s, you know, so.
Right, right.
It was hard to educate the people and to politicize. And there were a lot of friends of mine who were writers and poets. And, you know, we're just doing what we do. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Just doing what you do. And I just fell into it. And it's just something that I liked. And I got a scholarship to go to University of California, San Diego. Then I got a fellowship to go to London, study. Then I got back, and some friends and I, we started our own little theater company. Then I got to go to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Then I moved to L.A., you know?
Wow.
Things happened, you know.
Wow. You know, let me ask this, because, see, I'm 6'4", you're 6'5".
Oh, yeah.
Mm. As a man of size, now, okay, let me go. I'm going to go here first, and then I'm going to flip the other side. As a man of size dealing with the realms and the business of acting, because now we're talking about just the business of it and what this mean and that mean, how did that ground you or whatever? What did you do to force your way through all of that? Because you're not the quote-unquote leading man status.
No, I want to be a character actor. But that affected I lost jobs because of my size. But I kept going anyway. And aside from the fact that as an actor of color, 6'4", and not being your typical little dumb black guy in the corner, there was an issue
for
one of my first jobs. There was an issue. They asked my agent if I was gay because I've been doing Shakespeare for 2.5 years. As if somehow, if you could speak the King's English using vowels and consonants, that meant you were something else. And then I got insulted because I wasn't, but if I was, what would have to do with anything? You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
That's what really pissed me off. I said, I'm not, but maybe I should be just to piss you off, but I'm not. You know?
Okay.
But it was insulting.
Okay. Oh, now that's an interesting spin.
I can speak English like an educated person, but I have to be quote-unquote other than.
Right. Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that bothered me.
Now, that's very interesting because I am an openly gay actor. And with my size, it's almost as if, you know, I'm we get pigeonholed into the whole stereotypical what is supposed to be deemed gay, quote unquote. But you're right, because I'm able to speak well, and when I want to talk, you know, my diction is on point, and you know, my vocabulary is decent, and I'm not, you know, a thug and this, that, and the other. It becomes very such a huge battle in this particular business. And well, you were able to,
Yeah. They don't know what's outside the box. They have a difficulty adjusting to that. But if you work it hard enough, sometimes you can get by it.
You know? Okay, right.
So, I'm from the theater. So sexual orientation was never a question. Nobody really cared. You know, it's like, I'm thrilled to death.
Right, you know.
Whatever it is that you do.
Okay, right. Okay, just make sure you hear it. Okay, your call time is 6 o'clock
it's
now.
And let's do this, you know. It's like
right,
Ailey.
And we go.
Alvin Ailey said to his dancers, he said, I don't care how much girl you are on the street, but when you hit the stage, you're all man.
How about it? I'll say, wait! Wait! Oh, okay, okay, that's cute. That's cute. Okay, that's cute.
Work it. But see, I've been in shows. I did some shows with friends, you know, and you never knew what was orientation. You never asked, but you could tell
mm-hmm.
in certain performances. And so you would let
right.
the younger brothers know, you know, my brother, you need to stiffen this up a little. You know, nobody needs to know your business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you want them to know. Nobody needs
right.
to
know. Right, and remain true to the character that you're portraying.
The character,
exactly.
This is the theater. It's, you know,
exactly.
the sacred place.
Okay, see, okay, the theater, not the theater. Oh, I
no,
hate that.
No.
Anyway.
No, please.
Okay, right.
Bob Gordy,
now, okay, because we're on this gay thing, I have to go here. Do you know that in particularly the black male community, gay male community, that you are considered, number one, a hero because you're a man of size, but number two, you are a sexual icon
oh,
to us.
Oh,
you didn't know that? After
no.
all these years, you didn't know that?
Oh, get a go, oh, please, no, please.
Please, baby, I'm here to tell you. I'm here to listen. There's four or five names that come up. We think black men in Hollywood, as far as men of size and those of us who like men of size,
uh-huh.
there is. Okay, and it comes up. We always say this like this. Michael Clark Duncan, Ving Rhames, Anthony Anderson, James Avery, and then we would go, sometimes we'll flip a coin and come up with a fifth name. A lot of times we'll go to, what is Harry's last name? I can't think of Harry's last name from Boston. Oh, T. McBride. He's Boston
oh.
Public. I'm thinking Harry from, what's the name?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you are a status symbol.
Oh,
in black gay male culture, because when you were working on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you were tall, you were everything, and see, for those of us who like big boys, yes, you have become an icon, a sex symbol, honey. And
oh,
you never knew that all these years?
Oh, hell no, I never knew that.
Oh,
never
child, well, let me be the first to break that news to you, honey. Yes,
oh.
baby.
Ooh.
Okay.
They like telling my wife.
I know. Tell Barbara. Tell us that girl. Okay, girl. Okay.
Well,
anytime you say, okay, where you at, James, honey, just say, we snatched the thought. Okay.
Well, I don't
we
know.
We pulled the thought.
I don't know if you know this, but I was one of the first gay characters to die of AIDS on television.
No.
Years ago, when I first got here, there was a show called Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. On network. And I played a gay football player.
That's right.
And I died of AIDS.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right, you did.
Yeah, it was the first one.
Oh, wow.
But that was interesting. But
I completely forgot about that.
I just lost a friend, some friends to that disease. You know, it made me a little more sensitive to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, here in this industry, you know, how is it that you're able to bounce back and to maintain yourself? Because, you know, there's a lot of people, named and unnamed, who have, you know, succumbed to HIV and AIDS and other deadly terminal illnesses. When you become friends with these folks, and then we end up losing them, you know, how did you maintain yourself without going through, you know, the whole want to fall in the casket kind of thing that we go through as black folks?
No, well, you know, I think it's a lot about my rearing. I've lost people in my life, but the thing is, people that you care about, you never really lose. I mean, they're friends
exactly.
that I know, you know, that I respect, and I was glad that they had been in my life for whatever time they were there. I mean, you learn a lot from the people that you know. You know, if you have quality people, I mean, your real good friends you can count on one hand, if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm. Okay, say it now. Say it.
A lot of acquaintances, but the real good friends on one hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those are people that you don't have to see every year. You don't talk to every night. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
One or two years you call, you still here? Yeah, I'm still here. Okay, bye.
Right. 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 Okay, hey girl, yeah, we kick it. Okay, boo. Just want to hear your voice. Gotta go.
And if you're lucky when the quality of people that you surround yourself with, that's why you have to be careful. I tell people you have to be careful of the people that you surround yourself with. You have to separate the wheat from the chaff. Those who are there for one reason, those who are there for another. I mean, most of my friends, my good friends I've known for 20 and 30 years, they haven't changed.
Exactly.
But they haven't changed, you know. And it's a matter of your life, of how you live your life. I'm lucky that I have a wonderful wife, that I have a son, I have grandchildren, I have a life, you know.
Right.
The person, it's really important, the significant other person in your life. I'm lucky that I have the woman that I have in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But again.
Yeah, because I've been married for like 20-some years now, right?
24 years, yeah.
Yes, yes.
But that's because of, again, you know, that, you know what I believe? I believe that a man's relationship with his mother defines his relationship with women for the rest of his life.
Okay, now.
That's one, or he doesn't. And a woman's relationship with men, with her father.
With her father, that's right.
Defines her relationship with, you know, men for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
If she has a good relationship, she'll look for good men. If she has a bad relationship, she'll always have somebody who's unavailable in her life, someone to screw her up.
Exactly. But, you know, taking that lesson, how do you incorporate all of these wonderful jewels into building your characters, even when you had to play someone sinister?
Oh, well, everything you play is a part of you. Sinister guys are better because they're much more fun.
I know. They're so delicious. Oh, I love it. They are delicious, yeah.
Good guys are basically just good guys. They're boring, okay? But evil,
yeah.
You know, evil is something else. And they never consider themselves evil. They're always wronged somehow.
And misunderstood, exactly. And knowing they got a bitch stick going up their spine from hell.
Yeah, and acting is an extension of psychology because you get to know yourself. Every role you play is a piece of you. So you examine things in yourself that you'll never be able to act upon in the real world. You can act upon.
Mm-hmm.
And it releases you and frees you up in a real way.
I like that. Acting is an extension of psychology. I like that. I'm quoting that. I'm putting that on Facebook. I'm serious. I'm writing that down. I'm putting that on Facebook. And I'll give you credit that you said that.
It requires examination of who and what you are as a person to be able to explore and to build a character, you know. It's like when I was in school,
mm-hmm.
and studied voice and whatnot. You studied how you breathe, how emotions affect your breathing, what does that breathing change in your body, all of
that.
Not just standing up and saying lines. That's what pisses me off sometimes. People have no respect for the craft of acting. Because it's not...
Right.
It's like, I don't want to see you act. You know, I don't want to see you work.
Right, exactly.
I don't believe
exactly
what that person is, you know?
Now, what was the transition like for you, going from being a voiceover actor when you were doing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle as the voice of Shredder, for those of you who are turtle lovers, okay, and doing that character voice, and then you did a couple of other characters in the animation world.
Sweetheart,
and then going from there
to... A long time ago, one of my teachers told me, you're only an actor when you're acting. The rest of the time, you're unemployed.
How about that?
You do whatever you can be paid to do. You want me to do a commercial, I do it. You want me to do voiceovers, I do it. You want me to do a play, I do it. You want me to do movies, I'll do it. TV, whatever you're going to pay me to do is what I'm going to do. So I can work. Okay? Now, when I was in college, there were people there, very elitist, They were like, you know, I'm never going to do television. I'm only going to do theater and film. I said, oh, really?
Really?
I have a trust fund because I need a job. So,
I have that.
You know, it's about working. You know?
Right.
It's about, you know?
I heard that. Now, let's go here, and let me take you back to the Uncle Phil day. Let me look at my time. Okay. Being deemed as, number one, you had made the list as one of the top 50 all-time American dads on television.
Oh, that's great.
From TV Guide, when they did a survey about this, I think 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm.
And Phil Banks had made that cut. But one of the things about Philip Banks is that, as you heard when I was introing you, you have become like the father of the hip-hop generation. You know, when Cosby came, Cosby was like the college father. You know, James, when James Evans was on TV, James was just everybody's daddy because we, mm-hmm. we all knew what that struggle was. And when there was a father in the home, you know, we knew what the ghetto daddy was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then come Phil Banks, you know, and he was a little bit more of upscale, polished, had money, but he knew he was from the hood. And I loved every time when mom and daddy came up there to take you back to your little piglet days and carrying on, you know. You know, and frying the chicken in the lard and things, you know. I love that. Now, being the father of hip-hop, what was that like for you in that particular situation, or did you see it as making that kind of an impact at that time?
Well, I really didn't see it as making that kind of an impact. I was really, it's funny that you say that, because, I, you know, that whole hip-hop rap thing, you know, I,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When they called me to audition for Fresh Prince, I had never heard of Fresh Prince.
Right.
Because I don't listen to rap. You know?
Okay,
I mean,
right.
I'm jazz, R&B, you know, I don't know what that is. And so it was a whole introduction to me to a whole different genre, you know, the gaming thing and all of that. Oh, there were a whole lot of things I had to get used to, just as a person, which, you know, I could translate into the character. And the thing with Philip was, As we all are, people of color, we're bicultural and bilingual. We come from two cultures, you know, that which we achieve and that which we come from. You know,
right. I like that.
Both of our families.
You got some cute little jewels, honey. I'm living for you. So you done became my new BFF, honey. I'm like, okay.
Now, in most of our families, as in Barack's family, you know, you have the classy ones and the bums and the thugs. And we have to.
Right.
Cousin JoJo and, you know, Cousin Boo Boo, you know, that kind of thing.
I love that, Ray Ray and Rochelle, yeah.
Yeah, that one, you know, Lanisha. And they're all in the family, and they all come from that family, and we all have to deal with that, you know. Because I was taught very early on, it, you know, to be bicultural and bilingual. Like, you know, when I'm out in the world and looking to achieve, of course you attack your vowels and your consonants. But when you're hanging out with your boys, yo, what's up? What's going on, my brother? You know, then you have You know, but that's what we have. And the thing is also that the mistake that happened then was that the younger generation always thinks they know the best. That everything that's going to happen to them for the first time, that no one understands them, that what they discover is the only thing. And Phil used to have to pull Will's coat. Hold it now. You know?
Exactly.
You know, this. No, you ain't the only one who knows what's going on. You know, miss what's been going on. You know, and what I liked about Phil is he made no apology for his success. You know,
Wasn't that beautiful?
There was an episode where a friend of his that he used to protest and work with, and she came and got on his case for being, you know, being rich and taking
being
care
bougie.
Of
yeah, I remember that.
And he said, "Look, let me tell you something. I worked very hard to get what I got and to provide my family with the best, and I make no apologies about it. And I don't hesitate to write a big fat check for something that I believe in, you know. Come here, you know." And I say that, and you knew what the interesting thing is.
What?
I remember when I was in school, I had Latin and advanced English and all these other things, but I couldn't take those books home. I had to do the work, you know, the work at school. Couldn't let
at school.
That stuff, because you know they get on your case. And they said, you're trying to be white. And what used to bother me was, so if I speak the King's English and I make A's, I'm trying to be white. But if I speak like I'm stupid and make F's, I'm trying to be black. So what are you telling me? That success or an achievement has a color? If that's the case, you don't know who you come from.
Well, now.
You know?
Well, now. See, and that there has, I don't know why we place ourselves in this
why
community.
You know,
because, yeah.
Where do you come from?
Oh.
Look at who we come from. So you do not come from a race of victims. You might have been victimized, but you're never victimized. You're only a victim
okay.
if you acquiesce to the victimization, if you never fight back. And we always fought back. And the reality is that racism has never stopped us from doing anything we wanted to do, ever.
Say that. That's true.
Might have made it harder.
Now, that there is true.
Well, we did it. Isn't that right?
That there is true. Now, I see. Oh, James, I'm in the calling you Jimmy in a minute now.
I know you can relate to this. There are three phrases that raised generations of black children that got us to achieve. See if you can relate to this. Number one, when I call you, come. You don't say huh, and you don't say what.
You better not say what.
By the time I understand your name, your little butt's supposed to be standing right in front of my face.
Right in front of me, yeah.
Be home by the time the street lights come on. If I got to call your neighborhood, your butt is mine. And number three and most important, if I got to leave work to come to school, see about you, you better have a broken leg or something.
You better be dead or half dead or I got to go to the hospital. I better not have to leave my job to come up to no damn school because you cutting the food. Woo, baby. Okay.
Did they not raise
you? Okay.
Phone, you know?
Oh, my God. Okay, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. I got to, oh, exhale. Cool.
And if the teacher
wait a minute. You don't sit me there because I didn't, oh.
If the teacher said, well, I'll just call your parents. No, Jesus, Lord, don't call nobody.
Okay, whatever you do. Okay, paddle me something. You know, I took the paddle in school versus calling my mama. Yes, I did. Give me a couple of whacks. Give me, oh, Lord,
whatever
don't you call that crazy woman down here.
Don't call that woman, you know.
Don't you dare.
And I did read an article about that, on corporal punishment in African-American homes. And it
comes
to slavery time. When instant obedience is a matter of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
When I call you come means stuff is happening, we got to go, we ain't got time to come looking for you. You need
that's
to
right.
Be here. You know?
That's right, and I don't have time to explain it. Okay,
no.
Right.
No.
But you hum and huh, what? That's
yes.
A slap in the mouth.
That's it.
Huh. And what? What?
No.
Mm.
No.
That's unheard of.
Be home by the time the streetlights come on. Every bad thing bad that ever happened to us happened at night.
At night.
The place for your children to be was home.
That's right. That's right. That's, oh, my God. Oh, wait a minute now, James. Oh, so I'm going to have a Florida Evans moment. Damn, because you ain't no 10. Oh, but no, you are back on television because now you're doing Sherry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Sherry and playing her father. Oh.
Uh-huh.
Now,
but you know
what is that like for you?
Oh, I love it. It's great. Because the one thing that we're missing as black people is a relationship between a father and a daughter.
Okay.
A grown-up daughter. You know what I'm saying? There are a lot of fathers out there who raise their children and have their daughters, but we don't hear about them. We hear about the ones who are not there, you know, and we see the results of women who don't have relationships with a good father. But what about the ones who do? And I just
want
to say that I can be there and say that there are those men who take that responsibility, you know?
Exactly. Do you find yourself gravitating to that now? Because you've been playing a lot of fathers after Fresh Prince and going to Sparks.
Pay whatever they pay me to pay.
Okay, it's so simple, it's complex. Shut up, James, now, because, see, you've been taking me over the rainbow.
Groucho Marx said it best. Now, I know what you are. We just haggling over price.
Okay. Okay, I live for that. You know, you are sending me, honey. I'm telling you, you're sending me. You are. I love it. I love it.
Okay.
Now, you know, let me. I want to ask you this because I've never been able to ask this to anyone, and that is, you've had a stint where you went to the Navy and into Vietnam.
Yeah.
And praise God that you came back home in one piece and able to achieve the things that you have achieved. In this day and age, when you hear the words, we're going to war or deployment, what does that strike in you today?
That strikes anger. Men, we should not be, I do a lot of work for the USO. Because I support the troops, I don't support the war. You need war is not
right. A lot of us are like that.
Deployment,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're talking about sending youth into harm's way. This is not something you do lightly, and this is something that will affect them for the rest of their lives, if they ever have a life afterwards. And this whole don't even get me started with the whole Bush thing. We've been in Iraq and Afghanistan for 9 years.
Yes.
9 years. That's longer than World War II, World War I. That's longer than Vietnam. 9 years. And the casualties have yet to be counted. Because it's not just physical casualties. It's the mental distress. It's the things and the destruction that it brings to a person's psyche to be in harm's way constantly.
Exactly.
You know, and people don't see that. And these are, you send boys at 17, 18, 19 years old at the most impressionable times in their lives. I know what it was like for me. I was lucky. But I have friends who are still screwed up from that situation. You know? And what really pisses me off is that the powers that be, they don't send their children. You understand?
I know.
Ain't none of their children over there.
Wow. Exactly. Sure. Exactly.
No. You know, because they did a survey during Vietnam. It was blacks, browns, and poor whites made up the majority of the soldiers in that situation. And that's what's happening now.
Wow. Wow.
So I am not thrilled. You don't waste young lives like that. I mean, look at the gifts they could give us. And you're throwing
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And
wow,
the thing
that
is. War has never solved anything. War has never solved anything. It's just set the stage for another war.
Okay. Press pause for just a second. Because on my timer, I have about a minute left. For those of you who are listening by computer, this is going to stop streaming in about a minute. Those of you listening by telephone, I got a couple more questions, and because I still got to go make donuts, child, so I got to get out of here in a minute. Okay. So those of you listening by phone, I said I got a couple of callers that want to have a question. So we're going to make it quick and bring it on through. So those of you listening by computer, I thank you so much for this special edition. I'm glad that you came in and had a little bit of fun with us because I love this, and we're going to go from there. If you're listening, you can always come back because all of this is going to be all in the archives, okay, so you catch everything in the archives. So with that, we're going to continue on, and let me go here. Let me take a call right now because I want to be through with them. Okay, I'm coming here to 989-790. 989-790. Hey, darling, you're dishing tea with Big Meat. Hello, caller. Yoo-hoo. Caller.
Oh, well.
Okay, let me tell caller. I'm going to do you one more time, girl. Caller, is that you?
Oh, well.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to go here, 734-925. 734-925. Caller, you're on the air. You're dishing tea.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How art thou?
Oh, hey! What's going on, darling?
I love you, and I love James Avery.
Oh, well, let him know that, baby.
Thank you.
This is Carline Regina Dixon from Detroit, Michigan, aspiring actress, videographer, and stand-up comedian.
Well, you better list your credits, girl. Go on, girl.
How about it? How about it? I have been so inspired by this conversation. I have been just yelling at my phone. I'm tingly all over, and as a struggling actor, I understand. I'm right there. I've been doing voiceovers. You need me to host a comedy show.
Whatever
you want me to do spoken word. I'm there.
That's right.
Okay.
I
want to
work.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Detroit has one of the most amazing African-American museums in the country.
Yes.
Yes, we do. And
so, did you have a question for
him? I would like some advice as someone who's trying to be multifaceted, and I just need just one more inspiring word from you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
okay. What do you need from me? I mean, I don't. You know, you're working. Obviously you're doing what you're supposed to do.
I'm trying my best.
Well, that's
I'm doing it. I'm out there getting it.
You're out there working it, but see, the thing is, the inspiration, and this is going to be very hard. Very seldom does it come from the outside. It has to come from you. You're the only one that sees your dream. You know, be that there people can support around, but the driving force has to be you. As long as you believe in that dream, and you do what you want to do, you know, and that has to be self-driven. There's some people who can support you. Some people will. Some people won't. Some people are intimidated. Some people aren't. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, it's that battery. There are always people who will say you can't. There are always people who will say you need to stop that now. There are always people who say, you know, you're too old to be doing this. You need to grow up and do something else. They're not you. You can always tell them to kiss your butt.
That works for me.
That's what's up. That's what's up. That's exactly what I needed. I've been kicking myself by listening to other people bring clouds on my parade.
No. You know?
Okay, did you know funny girl, Miss Fanny Bryce? Say, honey,
Yeah.
Okay, don't you please.
It's going down.
Okay.
Satisfied. As long as you get some personal satisfaction out of what you're doing, as long as it feeds your soul. When it stops feeding your soul, you need to stop doing it.
Ooh. Well, how about that? Okay, write that one down, girl. Write that one down.
I'm there.
Okay.
I'm there. It's one of my new affirmations.
Okay. Thanks, darling.
I love you.
I love you back. You know, I'm going to call you in a minute so we can holler together. Right. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Lord have mercy. Now, you know, here we go. Because now I have to go into the big questions, and that is, you know, being around and helping to shape the careers of Will Smith and Tatiana Ali and Terrence Howard and Miguel Nunez, you know, right when they were at the peaks of their career and just starting, and to see now, you know, Will is so heavy box office right now, it's a shame. You know, he's Midas.
Mm-hmm.
Terrence Howard is, you know, up and coming box office Midas, you know. Miguel, that brother, he's
great.
Like you, he's a worker. That child, honey,
yes.
If I look up one more time.
Yes, well, you know, Miguel arrived here in L.A. and lived on the street for a while at the Mission.
Damn.
Yes.
Yeah, I read that.
Came from Carolina, lived out on. See, this is what dreams are. Dreams do that to you. Dreams drag you around to make sure you believe in them.
Mm.
They test you. You know?
Okay, aha, do the dreams test you? Shut up, see, I'm writing that one down. Dreams test you. Okay, I told you, you are the man, you need to write a book, I'm telling you. Okay, the dreams test you to make sure you know they're real. Come on now. Wow.
You know that in your own life, you know?
Uh-huh, right, exactly. Yeah, see, when I lived in New York, I was like that. Left up out of Detroit, going there, I was 25, going to be a star, you know, or building that because I was with the production company. Mm-hmm. And he lied to me, everything was supposed to have been in place. Got there was nothing there.
Nope.
And Demetrius was homeless for the first month and a half. And for the very first time, I had to go down to the men's shelter, 30th Street and First Avenue, honey. Yes. So, whew, I know that struggle. Eating off of $2 a day, a bottle of water.
When I got out of the Navy, my VA check was 6 months late. I lost my apartment. I was living on the street.
Get out of here.
I just got a service. I just got finished serving my country.
You know, okay, don't you start me on that. Don't you start me on that. That's a whole nother damn show. Because don't you get me started on how they treat our peoples, the service men and women. Okay, see, okay, I'm going to press pause on my own tongue. But okay, hold on. Okay, because that infuriates me.
Yeah.
That there, it just, it outrages me to no end. So now that you're here at this point in your career, okay, the day ain't over. Where do you see yourself matriculating to now? What is it that you would like to see yourself do that you haven't done already?
I don't know. I do need to write. I need to get back to my writing, and I need to write some more things. I don't know, you know. I really don't know. I've got to take more control over certain things, you know.
Okay.
Put myself together. In that sense. And life keeps growing, you know. You never get to a point where it stops. So you're always learning. You're always, hopefully, you'll continue to grow and change until you shuffle off this mortal coil, you know. But that's
okay.
What keeps things exciting, you know. You never get to a point where you say, okay, that's enough, you know.
No, because then you stop living.
No.
For me, anytime you say that's enough, then you stop living.
Then you leave. You go.
You know. And no, honey,
I know everything I need to know about. No, you don't. You don't know anything. It's like I remember when I was in Atlanta doing a film, and this little brother came up to me and said, "I want to be an actor. What do I do?" He said, "What did you do?" I said, "Well, I went to college. I studied Shakespeare. I did theater and whatnot." He said, "I don't want to do no damn Shakespeare. I want to do movies and TV." I looked at him. I'm not going to say what I said to him, but I'm going to paraphrase. I said, "Boy, as long as you black and in America." And no such thing as knowledge you don't need. What don't
I heard that.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life. So you can supply the words I said to it.
Oh, you know what? This is Blog Talk. We ain't under FCC regulation.
That was the stupidest thing. What the hell? You don't need to know something. That's so stupid. I said,
I
what you're doing is, you're putting limitations on yourself. You can't blame nobody else.
Exactly. Exactly.
Remember, you know, when I was young, I came to my mother crying about something. She said, "Let me tell you something. You come from the people who built the pyramids and invented geometry. Now, all of a sudden, you can't do nothing because the white man don't let you." What kind of sense does that make? It's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life.
Now, so you just confirmed everything I said before you came on the air.
What?
I just said that exact same thing. About the whole educational system.
Oh, please.
You know, because that monologue in that commercial, I swear to you, that there has got to be somebody's mantra somewhere. I'm gonna record it because I've got to deliver that somewhere. That there is just too powerful to be ignored in the 30-second little blurb. That is too rich.
Well, I'm so glad that it is. I mean, I haven't seen it. I don't watch myself, but it was a good commercial when I shot it. I'm sure it was.
Oh, child, you've got to see. Yeah, well, it's hard to watch yourself because I know I'm like that. I don't like the sound of my voice.
No,
you know, I'm my own critic.
No,
you know, I can
sit. Clothes are growing. Oh, I look fat. Oh, look at that. Oh no, I can't watch that.
Right. You know, I could see me and not the character all the time. But like, okay, the character, that's your finger point. That day, nothing to do with the character.
God.
You know, this, that, and the other. You know, and all of those kinds of things. So now, when you are preparing for a role and doing your research, you know, to get yourself into this mind frame of this character, do you find that your research is easy, or do you find it, you know, somewhat difficult for you to go into that? I know for me, I think I know everything by osmosis. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would get lazy when it comes to researching my character until it's crunch time. And then I would pull and this, that, and the other. And by the time they say, okay, I need you, then I'm ready. But what is it like for you?
Well, you know, because I'm classically trained from, you know, Shakespeare you can't cheat on. And it makes me, I stay in the book. I stay in the script and pull up.
Okay, okay.
All the same skills you need to do Shakespeare well, you need to do August Wilson well. And everything you need to
get out of here. So that's the secret to August. Okay.
Everything you need to know is in the page, on the page. You know, with Shakespeare, it's every period, every dot, every comma, every verb, every adverb, every adjective. With August, it's basically the same way. It's the same rhythm of that whole thing. But in order to learn about a character, it learns by what people say about that character. And you have
mm-hmm.
to, and as an actor, you go in and then you have to make choices. Then you have to,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to decide what's the motivating force behind this particular choice that this person made according to the stage. I mean, according to the page. You know, it's very literate. You know, theater's very literate.
Right.
You see, in movies, you can do all the other things. They can rewrite the thing. They can take it, shoot it 20 or 30 times, and redo this and redo that and redo that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm learning that, you know, film work is cute, but it's cute. And don't get me wrong, it's love.
Yeah.
But I know, I'm a big old ham, and I like instant gratification, so I need my audience.
Yeah.
You know, I need those applause. I need to know that line was funny, and I need that laugh right then,
mm-hmm.
you know. To feed, you know, it's number one, it feeds my ego. And then number two, I mean, that's just the basic of it. And then number two, it lets me know that my work is being appreciated.
Yeah.
You know, versus having to wait for the day a movie to come out and then we got to listen to the, you know, that's cute. Don't get me wrong, it's love. But yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love that theater training. And here in Atlanta, a lot of folks are starting to divert away from that now. You know, they want
well,
everybody to.
I know that because they have, and believe me, I am happy for any brother who has any success in this business at all. I just worry
mm-hmm.
that craft suffers behind it, and that you want shortcuts as opposed to craft. I mean, you're supposed to be able to do Tyler Perry and Molière. Okay.
How about it? Right. Okay. As an act, right, because I truly believe that as an actor, yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and that's what you learn. I mean, in August Wilson, who is our Shakespeare,
uh-huh.
demands on you that Tyler Perry can't do.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
You know, there are rooms for Tyler Perry. I'm not saying there aren't.
No, let them who have ears hear, honey, because you just said a mouthful right there. August Wilson is our Shakespeare. Did you catch that, actors? August Wilson is our Shakespeare. Get your research done. If you missed that, I'm going to lay it on out. He just said the same skill set it takes to work Shakespeare. And that's hard, because I did Julius Caesar in high school, and that was hard. Oh, that was hard then. I was Brutus. I played Brutus in an electric blue sheet, honey. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. August says music, and he's got like 2 or 3 page monologues.
Yes.
You got to move that stuff. You can't just...
Oh. Yeah, it can't be flat.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. All right. See, those are you got to get to writing, man. See, these are the kinds of things when it comes to the business of acting and the business of show, because everybody, you know, we all know what the glitz and glamour is and the paparazzi and, you know, the tabloids. We all know what that is. But these jewels right here, this is the kind of stuff that's not taught. You have to experience it in order to understand it and then translate it so folks can get it. That's I'm so elated right now. And I'm so thanking you for, brother, man. Okay, I'm sitting up here. I told you I'm writing stuff down and taking notes and things because we don't hear this. And then, you know, I'm tired of seeing acting classes and things where, you know, they talk and they talk technical, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you really have to understand that body language or body image is everything to an actor, and it is your tool, it is your everything. Okay, yeah, we know that. That's the surface. Give me that under stuff, baby. I need to break through that surface, pull it, and give me the tool that I need to say, okay, boom. That August Wilson is our Shakespeare, people. That there, okay, I'm going to say it one more time because he said it. That is just monumental. August Wilson. It's our Shakespeare. And the same skill set it takes to do Shakespeare is the same skill set required to master an August Wilson play. You better understand that.
And anyone that you know, they will tell you the same thing.
Oh, my goodness.
You know? And
okay.
And what's happened a lot with our art, because art has always enabled us to survive, and I shouldn't say this because, well, I don't know what the hell. I worry about our musicianship. I mean, I watched the Grammys the other night, and, you know, every once in a while I hear this music. And I am a child of the 70s. I am, you know, old school R&B, and, you know, when people played instruments, they didn't just go through computers. You know what I'm saying?
Right, okay.
People could sing, okay? Like Chaka Khan. You know what I mean? People could
come
sing.
Come on now. See, we are kindred spirits now, James Avery. We are kindred spirits. Say it, man. Say it.
Well, they can write music, you know? They can write music and make beats. And, you know, it's like when Sarah Vaughan played piano. Carmen McRae played piano.
Right.
Arrangements, okay?
Right, and charted it and understood where the notes went. Nobody know how to read music anymore. Understanding the difference between a whole note and a quarter note and an eighth and a 16th note.
Let's get a computer and let's loop this. Well, let's steal something like Parliament Funkadelic and add this to Arte. Give me a break. Oh, you're in Atlanta, too, so they're probably never going to talk to me no more.
Well, yeah, I'm from Detroit. I moved here 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And the scene here, yes, the whole entertainment scene, which is a good question for you, because from coming up, I'm the last generation of understanding what it means to go from start to finish. The movie Sister Act 2, when Whoopi come in and they turn that studio, that was us in high school.
Uh-huh.
We took the basement of our high school right up under the theater and did just what they did. We had to rearrange flats. We had to paint. We gutted, brought in furniture and things to create our studio so we could have a place of solitude, made them install a bell system downstairs so we knew when the bell rung to get to and from classes, and then we were able to create. We stayed up building sets till 1 o'clock in the morning after school. My mother was upset about it, but that's what we did. You know, and understanding that training, I think I'm the last generation of that because now it really annoys and pisses me off when I go into a production and you telling me, oh, save your voice because we're going to have lavaliers. What the hell do you mean, lavaliers? You better look. Lavaliers.
We didn't have no lavaliers. That's why you have a voice class. That's why you learn how to use your voice.
Lavaliers. Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Don't even the question is, do you see us returning Or we're not, maybe not returning, because we can never go back. Time doesn't go backwards. But maybe we can reintroduce, you know, because everything comes around, new and improved.
Atlanta. I mean, there are people there who are superbly talented and who've been crafted. And it's just a matter of getting respect for the craft again. And I think there are people there who can do that. You know, it's the craft. It's the thing. Okay, it's one thing to be born with talent, but talent without craft is just that. You understand what I'm saying? Talent without training.
Talent?
Just that. You need training. You need craft. You need to learn how to do what you do. You know, you get a gift, but then you need how to use that gift. You know?
Okay.
You need
talent without training.
You know? And I know all you young people think you know everything. You don't. Okay?
Oh, my God.
Okay. Accept it. Deal with it. You don't. The thing about Will, when Will started acting, all of a sudden he got a new respect for acting. He recognized what a smart person does is recognize what you don't know, and you go to where you need to go to learn it. He did that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He hired a surge. He asked us. He recognized what he didn't know. And he went and he remedied that. He did not let his ego get in the way of enriching him or enlightening his whole knowledge. Okay.
I like that. I'm gonna take one more call and then I got to get up out of here. And I know. And I thank you for your time.
No problem.
Let me go here. 248-688. Hi, darling. 248-688. You're dishing tea. Are you there, caller? Or am I having problems with this doggone?
Here.
There you go. Hello, caller.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there we go. Hi, darling. Thanks for dishing tea, honey. What's up?
No problem. I wanted to say thank you to Mr. Avery for this very, very raw, real, and inspiring interview today.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes, I've really enjoyed it. I've become inspired to reach new plateaus in my career. And I do want to thank you so much for dishing tea today.
Okay. You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. That, wow, that's a beautiful thing. And I'm just so, I'm sitting over here. Carlisle said she was tingling, honey, and we always say that. Because I get tingling and I get giddy like one little schoolgirl, you know, because when I hear interesting and inspiring conversation, it does something to me, and I'm not gonna go there, but it sends me to a place where I'd love to let that become my mantra for the day, and let that take me into places where I want to go. I'm turning 40 in a month
oh, okay.
from today. Yes, baby, yes, and I feel so free. Woo! So those of you who are 40 and over, welcome me, honey, into the club in 30 days. Because when I hit there, baby, yes, yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, I hear folks say all the time, huh?
You know your bullshit quotient shrinks.
You know what? Listen. Okay? Listen, sugar.
The stuff you took when you were 30, you ain't thinking about when you're 40. Okay?
Ooh.
So back off, baby. Watch out.
When I tell you truer words have never been spoken. Oh my God! I would say maybe about Thanksgiving, because your birthday and my father's birthday are a day apart. He's the 26th.
Okay.
And right about that time was when I started noticing all of a sudden everything, I was here. I never had the tolerance for it anyway.
No.
And folks know I will slap myself when I'm being stupid. I talk to myself in the mirror, and if I've done something really, really stupid, I've hit myself. And if I don't take it from me, I'm not going to take it from anybody else. And
nope.
Darling, bullshit and me.
Don't have to.
At this particular stage of the game have become so allergic to one another. It's crazy. And I mean, it's a whole new.
Don't have time.
Don't exactly. Baby, okay, either you're going to do it or you ain't. I ain't got time to sit up here and decipher no more, you know, sit up here and to play the waiting game. You know, oh, he said he was going to. He got so much promise. Look, baby, look, okay. Keep it moving, sugar, because I got things to do. Then if it's nothing but to sit up in my house, butt ball naked, and scratch while I'm watching television, I got something to damn do. You know, I ain't got time for you and your mess. You know what I'm saying? And I love that freedom about it. Oh, I love it. And as an actor, I'm taking all of that with me because I aspire to have the kind of career that you have. And of course, I got my naysayers that, oh, well, you're getting old, and you know the industry is always looking for, you know, the youthfulness, and you know you are big because you know you got all this weight on you and everything, and you need to do this.
Yeah, well, so what the hell?
Exactly, yeah. Honey. Listen, it what is for me is for me. It'll happen. It'll happen. So
what does Shakespeare say? Gather ye rosebuds where ye may. Oh, time is fast a fleeting, and that same rose that blooms today, tomorrow will be dying.
Did you do Othello? Did you do Othello?
Yes, I've done it many times.
God, I know it. I know it. I'm listening to you do that, and I'm picturing you. Good God Almighty, God of, oh my God, I would love to see you do that.
I was fabulous.
I know it. I know it. I know damn well you
were. All three times, I was fabulous. Ass, baby. Yes,
I love it. Oh.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, because I got to go make donuts now, so, you know,
okay,
I'm a little late,
care.
But that's all right. They'll get over it.
Okay.
Thank you, and I will definitely be keeping in touch with you. You can always come back. I will let your people know how to get this so that you can download it yourself and this, that, and the other. So thank you so much
for just
wisdom, baby, for wisdom. Oh,
no
thank
problem.
You.
Okay.
Okay, I'll talk with you soon.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. James Avery, honey. Oh, did you have a good time with it? I hope that you did. Join me next week on Wednesday, the 10th. It's going to be a fun show. I think I'm going to piggyback off of what I started today as far as dealing with the educational system. I may have a guest, I may not, honey. We don't know at this particular point because we just don't know. Okay, and that's just being real. At this point, let me get up out of here because I got to go make a couple of donuts to keep my roof over my head, and we'll move on from there. So thank you for this special edition of Dishing Tea. Tell your friends if you loved it. Tell your enemies if you hated it. But one thing is for sure, this will move forward and go on. Until then, darling, I go by the name Big Meat. So thank you for Dishing Tea with Big Meat. I'll talk to you soon. Ciao.